Radio Prague News.
The Czech embassy in Syria is to provide consular services on behalf of the United States. A report suggests Prague's Blanka Tunnel cost will reach 36 billion crowns, and Czechs win their first medal at the Olympic Games, a silver in the men's kayaking competition. The Czech Republic is to provide consular services for the United States in Syria, the Czech Foreign Ministry has confirmed. The move comes following the closure of the Polish embassy, which had been undertaking this service for the United States in Syria on Friday following security concerns. The Czech embassy will also continue to provide consular services for the Slovakian government in Syria. The United States embassy in Syria was closed back in February as violence flared up in the country between pro-government forces and anti-Assad rebels. The Czech moves comes in response to a request by the United States government. The Czech Foreign Ministry has said that its own country's presence in Syria will continue to be evaluated in relation to the ever-changing security situation in the country. Prague's underground car traffic tunnel, known as Blanka, will reach a final price tag of 36 billion crowns, according to a report obtained from Prague municipal authorities by the newspaper Hospodarské noviny. The tunnel, which is set to open in May 2014, will provide a traffic bypass from the north to the southwest of the city. Construction on the roughly 6.4-kilometre tunnel began in 2007, with an estimated price tag of 28 billion crowns, according to the then-mayor Pavel Bem. Engineering challenges in the digging of the tunnel are said to be behind the increased costs. However, city authorities are claiming that they managed to reduce costs from escalating to 38 billion crowns, saving 2 billion. The tunnel is being built by the private firm Metrostav, with finances coming from both Prague and the national government. The Czech Republic has ended its Olympic medals drought with a silver medal win by 25-year-old kayaker Vavřina Haradilek. The silver medal win was in the Olympics men's canoe slalom K1 kayak category, with Haradilek coming in with a time of 94.78 seconds. He was pipped at the post by gold medal winner Italy's Danielle Molmenti, who came in at 93.43 seconds. This is Haradilek's first Olympic silver. The kayaker came in 7th place in his category during the Beijing Olympics 4 years ago. Last week, staff at Prague Zoo were in mourning over the accidental self-hanging of the 5-year-old and much-loved gorilla Tatu. However, mourning turned to joy on Tuesday as the zoo announced that Tatu's mother, Kiivu, was once again pregnant. The birth is expected at the end of this year. Kiivu, who is 19 years old, is also the mother of the 7-year-old Moya, who was moved to Spain in 2011, and 2-year-old Kiburi. Meanwhile, it has been revealed that the deceased Tatu will be stuffed and placed on permanent display at the National Museum. And a quick look at the weather. The next few days will be mostly clear with increasingly hot conditions, some showers and storms coming in from the southeast. Daytime highs should range between 24 and 28 degrees Celsius. I'm Dominic Yoon, and that's the news for now.
Listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's program, we'll tell you about a campaign aimed at fighting anti-Roma prejudice and helping the Roma find work. And we'll report on the summer film school festival that took place in Uherské Hradiště last week. In our main feature, Marketplace, we'll look at efforts to regulate lobbying here in the Czech Republic. And we'll end the show with a Czech lesson as usual. So do please stay with us. Czech NGO IQ Roma has just launched a new campaign aimed at tackling prejudices against the minority deeply ingrained in Czech society. Making use of snappy headlines in its ads, as well as a video clip showing the Roma as invisible in society unless they're performing music, the NGO hopes to shake up the status quo. Jan Vellinger asked the NGO's director, Katarina Klamková, about the campaign's main goals.
The main aim is to challenge the prejudices of the broad Czech society regarding their view that Roma people in Czech Republic are a specific group that is collectively dependent on social benefits and is not willing to work. And we are trying to change this. We are trying to show that Roma people are individuals with individual characteristics just like any other person, and plenty of them are very good in their jobs, are seeking to find jobs and have quite good qualifications for the job market, or are trying to find some job placement.
It seems to me that the ads or the billboards that I've had a look at make very nice use of double meaning or a twist on slang or expressions.
Yeah, that was the idea.
That was the idea. One of them is "Cikan mi vibi lil bit," and to explain that in English, "vibi lil" is the word for to whitewash or paint, but it is also the word to completely rob or empty an apartment.
Yes, we are trying to find out slogans or expressions which are very common, which even media use, which are common in, let's say, pub speech. And we are putting them in connection with our target group. And then we are trying to show that it's it could be a nonsense collectively it's nonsense. And there are people which are individuals. And you always have to bear this in mind. Mm-hmm. That it's important to see in people individual abilities and give them individual chances, because it's a psychologically difficult situation, specifically for the young generation. So if Czech society wants some change, the change is within the new generations. And if the new generations see self-esteem and even aspirations are important for any life success. And if their aspirations are very low because they do not feel wanted or welcomed in the society, and they see that their parents are totally apathetic and sad about the situation that they face in everyday life, then they do not have this motivation and this inside strength and the aspiration to succeed in the life, in the education, in the career. So it's very connected with the solution itself.
And do you think that the humor, which is inherent in the campaign, because the punchline to "Cikan mi vibi lil bit" is, but he did a really good job. In other words, he didn't rob him, but he painted it really well. Do you think that that humor may help get the message better across?
Well, I hope so, because I think it's difficult if you would choose any sort of ideal campaign, because I think the issue is so difficult, and the attitudes, they are so strong that I think it can work with a part of the society which is open, to the issue, which gives people a chance. So it addresses rather the positive and open part of the Czech society and the young generation and the university students, because we believe that this is the healthy part of the society which should influence the way how the Czech life will go on in the future. And every one of us, even myself, have to be repeatedly informed about it, because I mean every one of us, and even I have some stereotypes with which I close the day, and I have to be aware how difficult and how strong it is with the Roma people, so I can reflect it and then do something practical about it.
Katarina Klamková there talking about a campaign aimed at fighting anti-Roma prejudice here in the Czech Republic. Moving on now, the 38th annual Summer Film School Festival, which took place in Uherské Hradiště last week, attracted over 5,000 visitors. This year's programme was mainly focused on Hungarian film and the history of movies in general. Tom McEncrow looked into what makes this festival so special.
Blessed by good weather and a beautiful host city, the Summer Film School is regarded by many in the Czech Republic to be second only to the International Film Festival in Karlovy Vary. Originally founded as a summer film seminar for professional as well as amateur filmmakers, the event has grown much in size since its humble beginnings in the 1960s. Today, it offers one of the best film festival experiences for the masses, while still retaining its rich educational potential. Featuring seminars with many distinguished filmmakers, as the festival director Radana Karena was eager to emphasize.
This year we've had multi-award-winning directors Carlos Sára, István Szabó and Abe Kiarostami, who also received our annual Czech Film Association Awards. We had many Czech guests, and we also had other famous foreign guests, for example Marcel Jankovic, as well as Sri Lankan director Vimukti Jayasundara. What also makes the Summer Film School so special is the fact that ordinary visitors can simply meet these artists in the streets, cafes, restaurants, and have a chat with them, rather than these talks being restricted just to film classes or discussions. which isn't usual at film festivals.
It is exactly this informality, mixed with the simplicity of a picturesque Moravian town, that makes this festival so unique, as was confirmed to me when I asked the festival visitors why they were here.
It provides a lot of very interesting movies, interesting guests with whom we could get a chat and a beer, and this freedom what I like on this festival.
Ještě nikdy mě to nesklamalo.
It hasn't ever disappointed me, especially in its originality. The silent movies and live music are always a major experience. I'm a film historian, so I guess you could say I'm here on business. I've been visiting this festival regularly for a long time already because it was always an event that showed films one wouldn't see anywhere else.
This year, the festival focused mainly on Hungarian film, featuring 34 movies spanning from the silent era of the 1930s up to contemporary pictures directed by the aforementioned Hungarian master director István Szabó and young hope Bence Figelauf. However, this was not the only feature that the festival organisers decided to zoom in on. Among other features, there was also Mark Cousins' critically acclaimed Odyssey documentary series about the history of film, a series of films themed on the assassination of Heydrich, and a tribute to Lawrence of Arabia director David Lean. Finally, I asked Ms. Karena about what country they plan to focus on next year, and why she thinks English speakers might enjoy the festival as well.
We are still in the process of choosing, but most likely it will be either Finland, southern France, or Portugal. I think English listeners would find almost everything here. 90% of our films have English subtitles, and most of our international guests speak English, of course. Other than that, this is, of course, one of the most beautiful and historic towns in the country, in a region famous for its wine.
Apart from the beautiful venue offering a rich choice of films to see, the annual festival also offers a number of concerts, exhibitions and film classes.
My thanks to Tom McEncroe for that report. A reminder that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it is now time for another edition of Marketplace with Jan Richter.
Czech lawmakers have been consistently criticized for being prone to lobbying, for instance when it comes to the regulation of gambling, roadside advertising and smoking in public spaces. As part of its efforts to clamp down on corruption, the Czech government is now working on a bill that should regulate lobbying. If approved, this law would define lobbying and require lobbyists to register. I discussed the proposed legislation with James de Candol, a Prague-based consultant and lobbyist, who believes it will bring no significant improvements.
The standard objection that's given to attempts to regulate lobbying thus far, and there have been several fairly half-hearted attempts to do this in both Slovakia and the Czech Republic over the years, the standard objection is the law is sufficient. It may not be applied, but the law is sufficient to regulate the bribing of politicians or the criminal activity in relation to public officials and so on. And this kind of regulation is redundant. I think it'll be very difficult to define who is a lobbyist and who is not a lobbyist. I think there is a danger that those who behave in a legitimate fashion today will not behave any differently if they are obliged to appear on a register of lobbyists. And those who behave in a criminal fashion today will not change their behaviour either because they won't register as a lobbyist. So the challenge will be, of course, to capture those who behave badly and are not registered. And I'm not sure how that's going to be accomplished.
I think that one of the reasons why they're trying to, for instance, introduce these registers of lobbyists is to make sure that when there's a contact between a member of parliament and someone trying to persuade him who's not on that register, that sort of rings the alarm.
Yes, indeed, and of course I understand that, and that superficially makes sense, but I think you have to step back, and In the case of the Czech Republic and certainly in other countries, I think you have to abandon most of your preconceptions about the way a liberal democracy functions, built upon political parties with countervailing powers and balance of powers and so on. I think you have to abandon all that, because the assumptions that we make, you know, are that the MP is being influenced by people acting on behalf of commercial interests. But in my experience here, the so-called lobbyists that you see in the parliament, they're not really trying to persuade members of parliament to do things. They're simply going to parliament with a set of instructions which are then carried out. So my view is fairly bleak. I don't see this as a game between two independent actors who are trying to persuade each other or to do something that they wouldn't otherwise do. So I would say that much of the activity in Parliament is simply essentially someone delivering a draft of kind of how they want the legislation to appear or how they wish the members of Parliament to vote, and the members of Parliament simply do what they're told. And I wouldn't call that lobbying, I would call that instructing.
But I mean, you famously broke the tobacco monopoly back in the 1990s, working for a business client for a commercial interest, and you somehow managed to persuade MPs to pass new legislation cancelling that monopoly. I mean, how is that different? I mean, with the burden on your payroll, but you must have somehow persuaded them. How did you persuade them?
Well, thank you for asking that question. It's a long, long time ago, and things have got a lot worse since then. And in the early days, everyone was perhaps a lot more optimistic. We're now a lot more, well, I'm certainly a lot more realistic. But in that particular case, we were making no progress whatsoever with any of the political parties then in power, for one very simple reason. A great deal of the funding for the political parties in the early days came from the tobacco industry. And of course, when Philip Morris acquired Tabak and acquired the monopoly, it was very difficult to persuade the ODS and even the ODA to change their way of thinking on this. And we were able to make progress by a stroke of remarkable good fortune. There was a very dear mid-ranking bureaucrat in the Ministry of Agriculture who, I think, he just wanted to get rid of us because he was so fed up with us coming in and lobbying him for the ministry to introduce change in the legislation and send it to Parliament to remove Philip Morris's production monopoly, that he slipped us a photocopy of part of the secret sales agreement between Tabak and Philip Morris. And that contained various interesting pieces of information, which I then showed to my interlocutors in the government, not in the parliament. This was essentially an executive issue at that stage. And they responded accordingly. And within a very short time, there was a piece of legislation presented to the lower house of the Czech parliament calling for the end of this production monopoly. There was just a stroke of luck.
What does Kandol Partners do, in fact, now, today, in the Czech Republic, and how do you do it?
Well, actually, we do very little of what most people would see as lobbying, where we have a clear objective given to us by a commercial client in the context of Parliament, where we would go in and try and persuade members of Parliament to vote in a particular way, in committee especially, and then in the plenum. We do some of that, and it's very, very difficult to achieve results without being corrupt. And because we are not corrupt, we're generally not very successful. But I would say this, that it depends how you measure success. Essentially, what we try to do is to drive up the cost of the other side, the cost of them winning. They usually will win, but we want to make sure that, reputationally speaking, it's going to cost them a lot more. And that in itself can be valuable for a client. I'm not saying we always lose, but we do very little work like that now, simply because it's incredibly difficult to achieve results without being corrupt. And without naming any names, we have been asked over the years numerous times by members of parliament whether their services are invoiceable.
Well, the Czech government describes itself as anti-corruption government, and one of the parties, ironically, Public Affairs, ran with a very strong anti-corruption rhetoric. How do you see the Czech government's anti-corruption zeal and efforts?
Of course, I welcome the rhetoric, because it's the right rhetoric. I say that because I'm very conscious of the fact that your president, President Václav Klaus, delivers constantly the wrong rhetoric on the matter of corruption. He always downplays it, and indeed he dismisses it. So there is a clear contrast there between what President Klaus says and what Prime Minister Nečas says. I also think that using the right rhetoric drives up the expectations of citizens, and it's a dangerous game to arouse expectations and then not deliver upon those expectations. So the result of talking up a fight against corruption and not delivering will be worse, probably, for the political parties in Parliament than if they were to say nothing. So I think that's a positive aspect. And I think in real terms, that there is a very genuine effort being made to make it harder for criminal activity and sort of in public procurement and so on. I think that the mood has changed, and there is some leadership being shown at all levels. I don't just mean at the national government level, but in my own village in Velká Huchle, for example, the citizens of the village have become much more active over the last few years in standing up for their own interests and not simply accepting what is coming out of the village council. And I think you've probably seen that over most of the country, where many of the sort of incumbent mainstream parties have been dislodged by sort of citizens' initiatives. And that's a tremendously positive development. Above all, what we need is active citizens who are bloody-minded and simply say no.
Well, they did. 2 years ago at the polls, what happened, though, is now two MPs of the very party that spoke out strongest against corruption have been sentenced by first instance court on corruption charges. You said you welcome the rhetoric, but it seems that the action there is somehow missing. For instance, in the famous bearer shares issue, when it's been said many times that this is one of the core issues, what do you think of this, of the lack of transparency in all kinds of ownership structure?
Well, there are two questions there. The first is what politicians say and then what they subsequently do. The fact that elected politicians are corrupt is hardly a surprise to anyone, and they will always be corrupt because power corrupts. It's a law of nature. So I don't think it's a particularly surprising or depressing thing that a couple of politicians have been found guilty of corruption. Of course, many more should be found guilty of corruption. So I think one's got to be realistic about how politicians are going to behave. What troubled me at the time of the elections that you referred to 2 years ago was this tremendous hope that was placed in Topnola Devyet and VV. And you could see that this hope wasn't based upon experience. It was misplaced, if hope can be. I mean, hope's a tremendously, it's an essential thing, but you'll recall yourself that sort of tidal wave of enthusiasm for Topnola Devyet, which was essentially based upon the trust that was being placed in one man who perhaps doesn't or didn't have as much power, and certainly doesn't now, over the political party that we all hoped he would have. On the second issue of the impenetrable secrecy that surrounds many of the companies that win large public procurement contracts and the issue of bearer shares, I believe that that is probably the core issue. It's maddening. It's so frustrating to be told over and over again by highly placed public officials that the law simply doesn't require them to show any interest in the beneficial owners of the companies who are receiving vast sums of money from the public purse.
That was James de Candolle, a Prague-based consultant and lobbyist, ending that edition of Marketplace with Jan Richter. And the programme was first aired in May of this year. Now, in the time left to us, we're offering you another Czech lesson from Radio Prague's popular language series, The ABCs of Czech. Brambory pečený, ty já mívám
pečeři. Hello and welcome to Czech by Numbers, Radio Prague's own Czech language series in which we examine Czech numbers and their use in common speech. Today we'll be looking at the word number itself in Czech. The basic word for number is číslo. So, for example, number 5 is číslo pět. A natural number in mathematics is then
přirozené číslo.
To refer to figures, Czechs use a similar word,
číslice,
or
cifra,
the latter being related to both the English words cipher and zero. The Czech word for dial is derived from these words. You can hear either
číselník
or
ciferník.
The latter one can also be used in colloquial speech to refer to a human face. The idiom
v červených číslech
means in the red, that is, spending more money than you earned. The opposite is
v černých číslech,
in the black, earning more than you spend. Also derived from the word
číslo
is the verb
vyčíslit,
to quantify, to put a figure on something, for example, a damage. And the adjective
nevyčíslitelný
means incalculable. For example, an incalculable loss would be
nevyčíslitelná ztráta.
The word for number in the sense of amount is
počet.
So a large number of people would be
velký počet lidí.
In the plural, it is
počty,
and the word used to mean maths at school. The adjective
početný
means numerous, and
nespočetný
is innumerable. The adverb
bez počtu krát
means countless times, which brings us to the verb to count,
počítat.
It means to calculate, but also to assume, to consider. The Czech word for computer is also derived from that verb. A computer is
počítač,
not to be confused with the word
počítadlo,
meaning abacus. And that's all for today's lesson, but we'll be back next time with some more useful Czech phrases. Till then, bye-bye.
Naschledanou.
Pavla Horáková's Czech Lesson, and I'm afraid it's brought us to the end of today's programme. You'll find us at radio.cz. All our programmes are there in text and sound. Should you like to contact us, then our email address is english@radio.cz. We'll be glad to hear from you as always. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us today and take care.